Hey everybody, it's 6 past the hour, and this is Indirect Democracy. On this episode of Indirect Democracy, it's primary season plus Stimulate This. We're also going to have the global warming update, the president's love horoscope, a word from our sponsor, and of course, the What a Weenie Award. And welcome. Welcome to podcast number 29 of Indirect Democracy, found at www.indirectdemocracy.com. I am your host. My name is David. Welcome. I'd like to, of course, start this out by letting you know that Indirect Democracy is a very proud member of the Progressive Podcast Network. You can find that network at progressivepodcastnetwork.org. Or you can find their blog and forum sites at newmediarevolutionaries.com. I encourage you to go to their websites and check them out. They have some great podcasts there. And, of course, later on I'll be playing an ad from the Progressive Podcast Network along with our weekly different sponsor. So, it is good to be back. It's been a very, very long time. I'm not going to bore you with details. I'll get into actually some of that in just a little bit. But I did want to share with you one part of it. As you know, of course, there is an ongoing writer's strike right now, and on occasion, I do have friends that that I enlist to help me with voices and occasional writing for Indirect Democracy. What I'd like to do is play for you some of the phone calls and messages I've been getting from my friends as the writer's strike has gone on. So, here's a call from day 7 of the writer's strike.
Strike!
Okay. Now, if that wasn't bad enough, here's day 29 of the writer's strike.
Hey, hey, ho, ho, this podcaster don't pay no dough. Hey, hey, ho, ho, this podcaster don't pay no dough.
Day 53.
We are coming to attack your podcast. Make way for the might of the Iranian Navy and its fleet of mighty dinghies. This is not a hoax. Oh, crap, I have another call coming. Let me put you on hold.
Tall and thin and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking.
Day 76.
David, did you see the debates last night? The Republican said Reagan's name so many times, I thought he was going to appear like the Candyman and kill everyone. That's not a joke, so don't steal it. Hey, where's my money? Strike.
Okay, now, recently I finally met with them and recorded the conversation that I had with them. So here is the final resolution of what occurred and how I was able to finally get them back.
Okay, guys, let's get this clear. I'm not a member of the Association of Motion Picture and Television Producers. They do screen stuff. This is an audio podcast. We don't make any money.
We don't? Screw this. If I'm getting paid, I'm going back to work for Mitt Romney. At least he pays for good fiction.
Me too.
But guys, what about our struggle to get the progressive message across?
Nah.
What about truth, justice, and all that stuff?
Nah.
What about the free booze?
He's got a point.
Strike's over.
Okay, so maybe that didn't happen. No writer's strike. Long story short, the whole thing is just had a lot of personal things that had to be taken care of. Been away for a little while, but going to try to put out some podcasts on a regular basis. I will let you know that I won't be able to put out as much as I'd like. There are some other personal issues that will be coming up over the next few months, namely getting married. And, of course, you know, planning for stuff does take precedence. To add to the fun of our life and the things that are going on, we added a new member to the family. No, not a baby, although a baby of sorts. We got a puppy recently, and while he's wonderfully adorable, of course, puppies take a lot of time and energy, so that's just what's been going on, long story short. What I would like to say as part of a personal thing, and one of the reasons why there has been some delay, my fiancé is now going to be graduating with her MBA, and I'm very proud of her. And during the time off, she really needed access of the office to do her studies, and that was one of the more contributing factors, was that it was more important for her to do her work. I'm very proud of her. The other reasons were just time issues. There is a lot to talk about. So we're going to get into actually one of the most important things, and that's to talk about is the global warming update. For those of you who are new to the podcast or have been listening for a while, and I thank you for still sticking around to listen. The Global Warming Update is a news story regarding global warming that affects us, just the little ways that it affects us every day. Now, when I mean how it affects us on an everyday basis, of course, we're always made aware of the stories of how it will affect us in the future, and those long-term effects everybody talks about, flooding, droughts, pestilence, all those end of days type of predictions. But what I'm talking about is the stuff that's happening now, the stuff that people can relate to. Because when you talk about global climate change, global warming, everybody has these grand visions of these future events that could occur, and it's hard for them to connect to those things. So when we bring it down to a level of how it affects us in the here and now, that's the purpose of the Global Warming Update beyond just basic education. So here's the story that I found. It's from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. And the title of the story is called Global Warming Will Affect Football? No! Environment America released an article today describing how global warming could affect the future success of cold weather football teams, including the contenders in the upcoming Super Bowl. And I think that's a good reason why we're going to be bringing up this one, because the Super Bowl's around the corner. And probably by the time this podcast gets out, we'll know who won the Super Bowl. Now, the article continues to say that, according to national trends from recent seasons, cold weather teams tend to have a home field advantage over visiting warm weather teams. That advantage could be destroyed due to rising winter temperatures. And this is serious, guys. And they make a quote, "As if we needed another reason to tackle global warming. Now even football could be affected," said Nathan Wilcox, energy and clean air advocate with Environment America. "Congress must get serious about global warming before rising temperatures fumble away cold weather teams' home field advantage." That's right, global warming could even affect football. The article goes on to explain, I'm reading directly from the article here. The article goes on to explain other effects of global warming and urges Congress to strengthen and consider some key pieces of global warming legislation. It also adds some more football lingo, second half comeback, and more about tackling global warming to spice it up. So, just one of those stories where if somebody mentions that it's not happening, it doesn't affect it, well, if they're starting to worry about how it's going to affect your football team and their home field advantage, maybe find somebody who has a favorite team that's up in one of the cold weather states, Wisconsin, the Green Bay Packers, the Patriots, one of those teams up there. I believe the Bills that play through cold weather on the outdoor field. So go ahead, bring that up to them, and maybe it'll make them rethink and try to be a little bit more environmentally friendly. Okay, now here's an advertisement from the Progressive Podcast Network.
All I'm saying is give peace a chance.
Wait. Up.
It's time to take to the street.
Mainstream media, where are you?
George W. Bush was born on third base but thinks he hit a triple.
WakeUpAM.blogspot.com.
All the oil men in the White House.
Rumsfeld's cronies, buddies, neocon pals.
What is wrong with this picture?
It just bypasses whatever's in the Constitution.
Just when we think it can't get any worse.
Fascist government. Dictatorship.
He's like the ultimate spoiled brat.
Wake up and smell the oil field.
Remember who said that.
Healthcare? This is get sick and die care.
Mainstream media doesn't cover it, so that's why we're here.
Yeah, look for me at Gitmo. That's where I'll be.
Playing the
9/11 card every time
Americans subject to
eavesdropping.
These actions
are
within the president's authority under the Constitution.
It's ridiculous.
Laws.
What do we have to
It's
watch?
Poo-poo.
WakeUpAM.blogspot.com.
I dare anyone to call me a conspiracy theorist.
Okay, back to where we belong. It is time for the president's love horoscope to help him out, to give him some edge, because we like to believe that he likes to have a Reagan-esque type of thing going on. They all do, all the conservatives. Since the Reagans were big on astrology, I thought it would be helpful to give the president his astrological forecast. Now, because our president is in fact a Cancer, I like to give him his presidential love horoscope. And what better place to get any type of advice from the stars than from the ever prescient, ever knowing pages of Elle magazine. So, without any further ado, I bring to you the president's love horoscope. Oh yeah, there it is. We got the music going on. Alright, Mr. President. This is your love horoscope. Your love meter reading is a 7. Oh, Mr. President, Mercury goes retro, suggesting that you apply the brakes on any long-term agreements, personal or otherwise. And what would your job be if you didn't break long-term agreements? With you, almost everything is personal, because your emotions are intermixed with your intellect. Whoa, that must be a shallow pond. Now, this generally doesn't get in the way of your effectiveness, but can make decisions and challenges more daunting than they need to be. Mars goes direct this week, urging you to say or do something against your better judgment. But you don't have good judgment, Mr. President. Mars won't get in your way, Mr. President. So don't yield to this compulsive urge. Just step away from people and circumstances that push you closer to the fire. Right now, you need at least 3 weeks to get your bearings. And remember what your personal goals and needs are. Right now, it'd be too easy and regrettable to submit to another's demands. And I guess you're already thinking, that's the Democrats, aren't you, Mr. President? But it's okay. Because for you this week, your touchstones are Onyx and Citrine. And that is the President's love horoscope. Okay, for this week's podcast, I would really like to introduce you to a piece of music. I was introduced to this piece of music by the artist Dan Coyle, who contacted me. And I have to say, wow, am I really glad that he did so. He has a lot of great political pieces of music that I wanted to share, but there was one piece of music that I found on his site that I just fell in love with. And I wrote him back that it's like audio crack to me. I do listen to the song every day because I think the melody and the hook of the song are just rich and intriguing, and I wanted to introduce you to his music. The song I'm about to play for you is entitled Break Me Into Pieces by Dan Coyle, and you can find his music. Now, I have links up at the homepage for Indirect Democracy, and I encourage you to go to his sites, but you can also find his music at myspace.com/Dan Coyle, and you can also purchase the music from that site, and I encourage you to do so. I did, and without any further introduction, which I have already been doing, as I said, I just think the song is great. Here is Break Me Into Pieces by Dan Coyle.
You can't break me into pieces, pull me back together, pretend I'm fine, and you can't tell lies to me. I can see the truth beating in your eyes. I can't help those things I do. I don't mean anything by that. I know some days I'm doing just fine. Sometimes you've got to forget what you can. Moving out, don't pick me up. All I need's a little love. Show me everything you've got. Be careful what you wish for. What you want, and there's a fine line to be drawn. I think I'm right, but I'm sure better wrong. Pull me down, don't pick me up. All I need is a little love. Show me everything you've got.
pick me up. All I need is a little love. Show me everything you got.
Well, you may not know it, but right about now, this is about take two for me. Now, I had originally recorded some information to talk about the primary season before Super Duper Tuesday, which I think is just a ridiculous term. It's Super Tuesday. There were a lot of states. Let's not get ridiculous with how we put the terms, because if it was Duper, we would have known who had won the primaries, who came out of that looking good. But I think most people who know realized that there was no way they were going to have any clear winner except for, I think, McCain. I want to talk about the primaries real quickly, starting with the Republican side. I'm just going to quickly go over the disappointment that I think for Republicans would have been Giuliani and Thompson. For Thompson, who I think should have been a What a Weenie Award winner if I had actually recorded some episodes sooner, what a waste. What a waste of time and effort for the people that actually thought he was worth wasting their time and effort on. When people announce their candidacy, it inspires something within people to go out there and work for that person. And that's exactly what happened for Thompson. People actually put their time, money, and effort to go work for this man. And I'm not talking about the people that actually thought he had a snowball chance in hell or were paid to believe that. I'm talking about the volunteers that went out there to stump for this guy. The people who didn't have the money, who didn't have the backing, who didn't have the resources that the so-called experts have. To those people, Fred Thompson owes a huge apology and probably money back for every movie that he's ever made, because they wasted something far more precious than just money on him. They wasted their hope, because this is a guy who was just so asleep at the wheel and trying to go forward and only seemed to get any air back into the thing going into January towards the primaries. But during November, December, when it mattered, when he could have done something, this guy was asleep at the wheel, quite literally. So I feel bad for the people that actually thought that Thompson was going to be worth their time, because he never had it in his heart to do it. But if we're going to talk about people that really just wasted their time and money, you have to talk about Rudy Giuliani. Now, thank God to the Republican voters who actually saw past everything that was shoved down our throats for the past year that Rudy Giuliani was going to be the guy. Now, quickly, real quick thing about the media, because it's going to be sort of a... Is it one or the other as I talk about this subject? But I honestly believe that the reality of the situation when it comes to the media and when they deal with candidates. Now, of course, there are plenty of valid arguments when you talk about candidates like Kucinich and Edwards, and I'll talk about them in just a little bit, and their fight against corporatism, that maybe, and like I said, there are valid arguments to believe that maybe corporate interests are trying to keep them from getting their names up, because there's a lot of money at stake, and those two candidates would have been a serious threat. But when it comes down to it, is the corporate news media that organized and that capable of doing something, or is it just so frickin' easy for them to report on something that takes absolutely no news and effort to do anything? I mean, all you have to do is just watch the amount of coverage they spend on Britney Spears as a top news story when there's been tornadoes back east that killed 54 people, but over here in California and Los Angeles, our top news story is the fact that they let that nut job out of the hospital for a little while. It's easy news. I bring this up all the time because I don't think it's a vast conspiracy in a lot of aspects. I think it's just the fact that the news media is lazy. And it is so much easier to focus on a two-person race than a three-person or four-person, or deal with issues. When you ask a candidate, and I'm going to really quickly skip here to Barack Obama, but when you ask a candidate, do you think that Bill Clinton was our first black president? That's not an issue question. That is not a real question. When you ask the candidates about the process of getting elected instead of the issues that are at hand, when you waste any time about how their feelings work or what it's like to be a candidate, you're wasting our time. You're wasting my time. You're wasting their time. And for people who are talking, probably thinking, well, what about Kucinich, who was kept out of the Nevada debates? once again, I think this is just easy story. It's easy for them to stay there. And, yes, I do believe there are valid issues that have to be talked about and valid arguments about corporatism. But if they can keep focused on that two-person race, which takes less effort, less time, less thought for a lot of these people, then that's exactly what they're going to do, because it's pure laziness, nothing more. Because anything else just gives them far too much credit. It really does give them too much credit. Maybe you want to say that about Rupert Murdoch and Roger Ailes, and maybe there's, like I said, there's value arguments. Going to the MSNBC, and I'm jumping all over the place. I realize that. I apologize. The one thing that does bother me is that when people talk about a private news service that goes out there and holds a private event, and this is why they had every right to exclude Denis Kucinich from the debates, that just doesn't fly. When you have a, even if it's a privately held event that is broadcast on our public airways, even if it is cable, that is still our public airways going out there. When it goes into people's homes, that is no longer a private event. When people's homes are given this information, it becomes public. When it deals with the issues that deal with national security, national problems, the economy, things that affect us on a daily basis, that is no longer a private event. It is very public. And that is where I believe people have a great argument about Kucinich. But I'm going to go back to talking about Giuliani and the media. Like I said, I really believe it was just very easy for them. Hi, Juno. My dog's right here with me. I believe it's very easy for them just to say Giuliani's the guy, and everybody was just in love with him because he did the one thing that was important to do on September 11th, and that was to act like a mensch, to just be a simple human being and to say, we have suffered, we are in pain. And that's what everybody loved, was he was just human on that day. And you have to give him that he was. But it was just too easy for them to be focused on him as the candidate. Now, thank God, the Republican voters were smart enough to see beyond the package that they were being fed. And they were smart enough, and this is why I believe that no matter what the media tries to feed us, we can't get past it. Because they saw beyond everything else. They finally heard everything about Bernie Kerik, the affair with his now third wife. And I really believe that it was Joe Biden that just landed the death knell on him when he finally made everybody realize and said it in a great statement that the only thing that man knows how to say is a noun, a verb, and 9/11. It was a great statement because it was so damn true. And that's what I think turned off a lot of people, was that they saw this man was just exploiting one of the most horrific events in American history. So thank God for the Republican voters who saw beyond this shallow excuse for a campaign. Now I'm going to stick with the top three here because, like I said, it's just very easy. I can talk about Ron Paul. I can talk about everybody else that was in the campaign. But right now there's a top three as it goes out of Super Tuesday. And we're dealing with McCain, Romney, and Huckabee. Now Huckabee, since September, last September 2007, when I first sent him in an interview, I remember stopping in the middle of what I was doing. Because when I heard him talk, I heard a smart, charismatic, well-spoken man who was personable, funny, and came across not just as a conservative, but a conservative with socially, and I say this very lightly, some social progressive attitudes about health, about global warming, and about immigration and education. And I heard a man who actually had what I think most people would at least say in some aspects were true Christian beliefs about how you treat your fellow person. And it was at that moment I went, this guy is the real deal. Now, in some ways, thank God that guy finally realized or finally decided to drive the crazy bus. Because what he did was he became your pal Huckabee. Now, that's fine to do once you are the nominee. You can go have a good time. You can go on the Tonight Show and play the bass and make it seem like you're a personable guy. But jokes only work so far. When you're not being serious, when you're sending Chuck Norris out to make your campaign statements, people are going to realize that you're not a serious guy and they're not going to pay you much serious attention. And when you go out there, and like I said, he decided to drive the crazy bus all over the place and say that the only thing that should be amended is the Constitution because it should reflect God's law. Well, you've now scared the crap out of the people that at first thought, oh, hey, I kind of want to vote. No. You, ooh, shoo. Because that's what I did. Even that part of me, that old conservative part of me that said, I like him. Until he started talking about the Constitution, then he scared the crap out of me. even when he talked about if he didn't believe in evolution or those other things, he sat back and he went, I still like him. He's charming. I kind of dig him. And that's the thing about Huckabee. That's where it makes Huckabee truly dangerous. And it didn't surprise me that Huckabee won the 4 states on Tuesday that he won, because this guy is the real thing. He is so much more the real thing than Romney. Romney is just the most chiseled piece of crap I've ever seen come out of anywhere. This has nothing to do with him being a Mormon. It is just so obvious how inauthentic this man is, how phony he comes across. And it's part of that whole look that he has. Perfect hair, perfect face. He has the George Hamilton orange tan going on, which is really frightening to look at. This guy is such a flip-flopper that they should have a campaign commercial that has those little toy remote control cars that flip around, the one you see in front of kiosks at the mall, because that is how he is. He is saying and doing anything he can to pander. It doesn't take a lot to see that a guy who is the governor of the most liberal state in the nation, and I mean that with all the best things because I consider myself a liberal progressive, but when you have a guy that got himself into that governorship, you know that he had to say and do things that would have been considered progressive and liberal. Well, now he's going out there and claiming he's the most conservative of all the candidates out there. Give me a break. And for all this talk and the amount of time they waste on trying to resurrect the body of Ronald Reagan, it's like I'm expecting, instead of watching the debate, what I really want to see is like an A&E special or maybe something that they'll show on Discovery where they're going to go, hi, welcome to this old Reagan house. And you're going to see John McCain, you know, stand aside. I'm going to put the foundation back together, my friends. And you'll see Mitt Romney on the side. And he'll be just saying, well, if we're going to put this house back together, we need workers. And I'm going to go hire some Mexicans to do it. And, of course, over on the way thing will be Huckabee. And he'll bless the house. And he'll be providing the music and having a good time. And Ron Paul will be reminding us that there's no money to fix it. But they spend so much more time trying to talk about the past, and that's what's so funny about the Republicans, is how much they wish they could look into the past because the present sucks so badly, that they offer nothing more than the same old thing. And that's what's really sad, depressing, funny, and funny because it's sad and true, aspect of this Republican primary, because this is what we're left with. But if it is McCain, I think McCain has to be taken as a very serious candidate. Because he can go for it, and if he has Huckabee as a vice presidential candidate, and please excuse the dog, he loves to yap. He's a good dog, though. I love him to death. If you have a McCain-Huckabee ticket, you now have a conservative that can be accepted by the Pat Robertson contingency of the country in Huckabee, and you can have the national security-minded people who want to support McCain. McCain, for everything that he has, I will never understand why this is. Somebody actually works across the other side of the aisle and is a so-called maverick, that he is just not conservative enough. And that's what I think really is the telling part of it. Because what it's going to do is force the independents to say, he's not conservative enough. Maybe there's a reason they don't like him so much. And that's going to draw people towards McCain. It will draw the independents towards McCain, because they're going to see the extreme right trying to get away from this guy, criticizing this guy, and they're going to want to know why, and they're going to feel that appeal. Now, going to the Democratic portion of the primary, I will admit to you, now that I have voted, I'll tell you who I voted for, and I'm going to tell you who I wanted to vote for. I wanted to vote for Kucinich. I know it's crazy because a lot of people will tell you he never had a snowball's chance in hell. He looks like an elf from the Lord of the Ring movies. You name it, I understand it. I've heard it all. What I liked about Kucinich was not only his belief in the Constitution, but his plans on how to fix this country. And the one thing I did like was a guy that was more interested in a federal works program to get this country back to work, to put the money back into this country, into the pockets of the middle class and the lower middle class, by getting them back to work and fixing this country's infrastructure. If you're going to spend money, borrow money to get things done, I think that was the best thing to do. That was the clearest and best idea, and I loved it. I was behind him completely on it. I think it was fantastic. Unfortunately, because the powers that be, because he doesn't look presidential, because he doesn't look like Mitt Romney, it's just done. No more Kucinich for president, and he really did need to protect his House seat. That left me with Edwards. I liked Edwards, a populist. I like a man who actually goes out there and represents people that get hurt by corporations, who works to put a message across about the people. The Last Angry Man did a service to us by playing the acceptance speeches or the victory speeches after Iowa and reminded us that there were three candidates up there that talked about how that vote went. Two of those candidates spent a lot of time talking about themselves. One candidate spent the whole time talking about people and what was affecting them and the problems that this country and the people in this country were suffering through. And that one person was John Edwards. I get frustrated whenever I hear people say, oh, I think he's a phony, because what they bought into is the right-wing nonsense that's out there. God forbid that a man gets wealthy in the country where you're supposed to be able to pick yourself up by your bootstraps, come from the lowest rung of society, and make it. Because if you do that and you don't espouse their beliefs, well, obviously you're a phony and a hypocrite, which I think is just ridiculous. Because if we think about one of the great statements by a person who was rich who talked about the poor, well, that would have been Franklin Delano Roosevelt when he mentioned that you don't judge a nation by its prosperity, but by how its people do. And I'm paraphrasing that and probably destroying the statement. You have to forgive me for not remembering it completely. That was why I liked Edwards, because he may have made it, he may have had all this money, but he never forgot where he came from and always talked about the struggles that people were going through. And I think that was important. It was the most important message to get out there, because people are suffering out there and they need help. And it needs to be brought to light. But now it left me with two candidates to choose from. It left me with Clinton and Obama. And on Tuesday, there was a great moment going into that booth. Now, as a independent voter, I could choose to vote in a Democratic primary, and I did. And it left me with that wondrous sense of history, that I could choose to vote for a woman for the first time to be the nominee for the presidency, and not the first woman to ever run for the presidency. We know that's not true. We cannot forget that Barbara Schroeder ran back in 1984 or 86, 84, I believe that was the year. And, of course, Shirley Chisholm ran back in 1972, and she was not only just a woman, but she was African-American. I had a choice for voting for the woman or voting for the first African-American to be I don't mean to sound this to make it sound like I'm, you know, minimizing the statements, but being a serious, viable candidate, and that was Barack Obama. Because we have had candidates before. There were African-American who were running for the president, Shirley Chisholm, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton 4 years ago. They were all candidates, but this is the first time we've had a candidate who could go out there and be a serious, viable candidate who was African-American. And when it was all said and done, I chose Barack Obama. I chose Obama because I believe that this country needs an enema. This country needs serious, massive change. And you don't get much more change than Barack Obama. And this is, I'm not trying to say that his skin color or his ethnicity had anything to do with the reason I chose it. I chose it because there's a young man with a vision, and I shouldn't use young because he's, I think, only about 10 years older than me, but his ability to get across a message and a momentum is so strong. It is something that can unify, solidify, and bring this country together. I believe it is that strong of a message. Now, like I said, I hope that somewhere along the line he starts to adopt the stances and beliefs that Kucinich and Edwards brought forth, because they're very important messages, more important than one man's momentum. I didn't vote for Clinton for one very strong reason. Actually, it's a couple of big reasons. One, despite every bit of her statement about experience, I had a very hard time understanding the experience of somebody who, outside of being an attorney and a corporate lawyer, has no more than 6 to 7 years in the Senate, no prior legislative experience outside of that, except for being the First Lady of the country, of the United States, and of course the First Lady of Arkansas. And she may have had time working within the political parties within there and doing and getting things done, but I'm left with the memory of 1994 and working on the healthcare campaign and remembering how poorly that went. And you can say maybe because of her, because of Clinton's, maybe because the right wing was so against them. But there is something to be said about how that time worked for her and how polarizing and divisive it was and how they took her and how she's running her current campaign. Now, there's a lot to be said about how you run your campaign and how you're going to run your presidency. How George W. Bush ran his back in 2000 was exactly how his presidency has turned out to be, and how this current Clinton campaign is being run is very indicative of how she's going to run her campaign. And I'm not a fan of how she's running her campaign, because I see a lot of parallels. I see the dirty talk, the innuendos that come across, trying to say that, well, I didn't say that, or I never planned on that, or that's just my husband talking. Well, you know enough from campaigns to know that certain things don't get through or don't get out unless it's come straight from the top and has been agreed to from that time. So I just found the campaign dirty, and I just realized that if that's how she's going to be as a candidate with somebody from her party, imagine how it's going to be when she gets into the office and how divisive that's going to be. And that led to my second biggest reason. While I believe it will be an historic moment to have a woman running as the nominee for the presidency of the United States, I did not want it to be this particular woman, because I realized that when it comes down to it, after everything is said and done, she is going to solidify the Republican base to come out and vote against her solely because of her name and her name alone. Now, I also believe that, while I think this is probably one of the greatest coattails, you can write to me if you think I'm wrong. If this was Hillary Rodham all by herself, not Hillary Rodham Clinton, I don't think we would have paid much attention to a person whose voting record backed up so many things about the Republican Party. I don't think we would have paid her one bit of attention. If this had been Barbara Boxer running for president, I would have been not only voting for her in the primary, I would have been out there stumping the streets to get her that nomination. But that's just not what it is. I think that not only do we deserve a strong female candidate, we deserve a better one. And that's what it came down to. I just believe that when push comes to shove, more people are going to come out to vote against her. And I have talked to many people that are Republicans who are willing to vote for Democratic candidates. But when you mention Clinton, they will put aside everything that they want or everything that they want to believe in, and they will vote for the worst Republican candidate rather than vote for her. And that says more than you can imagine, because in the end, her personality will push people away. So we're going to watch to see how the rest of the results come out. It's going to be a very fascinating thing. I think it's going to be the first time in a long time that this is probably going to go through till April or May, probably be decided before the convention in August. But this is going to be one of the more historic and more important primaries that we will all remember for a very, very long time.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate. the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world. That will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
As a little break, I love that speech. I actually was reintroduced to that speech just a little while ago, and it's Charlie Chaplin from The Great Dictator. It really is moving, and I just had to share it with you. Now, going into the economic stimulus plan, I think this is one of the great jokes that's been placed upon us, because recently, just this past week, we have watched the interest rates for the prime rate get cut by about 1.25 points, which is historically significant and really fascinating, because the last time we had a cut in rates this severe was 1990-1991. Now, it doesn't take a political scientist or a major historian to remind you that if you were living in that time and were at least an adult, you would remember that in 1990 and 1991 this country was going through a recession. And it's kind of sad and fascinating to watch that apparently it's going to, that we have a recession going on, we were recently at war, still at war in our case, and a Bush is in the presidency. The coincidence is funny and striking all at the same time. What they have decided to do is to stimulate the economy with more continued tax cuts and to basically give us more money. Now, in 2001, they threw the American people a so-called bone by giving them what was in effect a loan against the next year's taxes and shot $300 into the economy. Now, you can argue all you want about corporate scandals, and of course 9/11 happened back in 2001, but the rebates that were given were completely ineffective, and we have watched this country go into further and further debt. And that's what concerns me about this economic stimulus program. That's why I say, you know, stimulate this. It's a joke. By cutting the interest rate, what they have done is increased the amount of credit out there and more borrowed spending. And if we look at this recession, we have to say clearly it's an offshoot from 2001, 9/11, and of course corporate scandals. But corporations, of course, were given lots of tax breaks, and in time we've watched people lose their jobs, and of course a loss of job bases out there causes people to feel that the economy isn't going strongly when you can't find work, or the only work you can find is greeting people as they walk into Walmart. These are not quality jobs. Service industry jobs are fine jobs, and I'm not trying to put it down. If you work in the service industry, I've worked in one too, not right now, but I have before. They're fine, good, honest jobs, but they are not the type of job that help you raise a family if you've already worked in manufacturing, getting paid far more money. We have increased the amount of service industry jobs, but lost the amount of manufacturing jobs. And I said a long time ago, back in podcast number 5, when it comes to the issue of immigration, for all this talk about trying to keep people out because we're so worried about the jobs they're going to take here, the lower than minimum wage jobs, I think we have lost complete focus on the jobs that we are sending overseas. I'm not worried about somebody coming here and taking a job as a dishwasher. I'm worried about the jobs that are going overseas in manufacturing. When people are losing jobs that pay $15, $20 an hour so they can send it overseas or to Mexico to pay somebody about $3 an hour, where's the bigger crime? You're putting somebody out of a job and, in essence, increasing and pushing forward this recession, because now you have more people in this country out of work. So you can look at that as one of the key factors as to what would have caused it. But if you're going to look at three things that would have caused it, you can look at the corporate scandals that have, not the corporate scandals, but you can look at how corporations have benefited from outsourcing. But you also have to look at the big elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about, because option number three is the easy thing to talk about, but it is the war. Imagine it. Imagine yourself, and just take from this point. You borrow money. You borrow more money. You borrow more money. The more money that you end up borrowing, the less valuable or the less intrinsic value your dollar has, because even if you make, let's pretend that it's like you bring home that paycheck, if 95% of it has to go to pay for these debts that you have, what is the true value of your dollar if it keeps accumulating? And that's what we're doing. We're accumulating more debt, which makes any money that we have completely devalued because we don't have enough to pay it all back. Plus, if we're pushing more money by increasing the amount of, by decreasing the interest rate, putting more money out there to borrow, just increasing our debt ceiling, and then shooting money into the economy for no good reason than just to say, here, go spend it. Well, when you increase that amount of money, you devalue your dollar. To give you an example, after World War I, when the Germans felt that, okay, we have a decreased economy, they just shot more money into it, it really decreased the value of their own money, so much to the effect that people were walking around with wheelbarrows to pay for bread. Now, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen in the United States, but at what point did we become essentially like the countries that we used to devalue their money for? The American dollar has dropped in value because of our continued borrowing. And if you don't believe that that's true, look at how bad the money from Brazil was at one point, the Mexican peso. These were countries that had to borrow from us so much that their money became completely devalued because they didn't have the money to pay everything back, so much so that we had to forgive their debts. So I do not understand where the economic stimulus is by increased borrowing, and that's what we're doing, and we're doing especially with reason number two as to why this economy is headed towards recession, or probably is in recession. Nobody wants to admit that Iraq is probably the greatest reason why this country is headed for recession. We have borrowed money from everybody, the Chinese, the Saudis. We are in debt to the Europeans. We are watching the euro become the new standard on how money should be measured against. All because we do not have the finances and resources to pay for everything ourselves. And we lose that value because instead of asking the American public to sacrifice and asking those who can actually afford it to sacrifice more to pay for this war effort, we have told people it's okay, just go shop, don't worry about it, we'll borrow the money. And it doesn't work that way. This is one that we have watched the national debt grow from $3 trillion to $9 trillion. That is serious money. That is the type of money that you can't even think about repaying. This war costs, in effect, if I'm correct on these numbers, $200,000 a minute. For every minute that passes by, $200,000 just goes shooting out the door to pay for this current war. Tell me that this loss of money, this loss of funds, the ability to put money into the infrastructure, put people to work, and this is why I liked Kucinich's plan, a way to rebuild this country back, whether it be from building roads, rebuilding bridges, creating new energy sources, creating new jobs that could spur out of this, out of getting people to work and new industries that could just shoot up from anywhere when you get people back into the workforce. This is one of the bigger reasons, probably the biggest reason, why this country is headed towards recession. So when you look at a mismanaged war where billions of dollars go missing, $9 billion within the first couple of years alone just goes missing in pure cash, you have to ask yourself, how are we not already in a recession? And that's reason number two. Now, reason number three that people like to talk about and say, well, this is the cause of the recession. Well, no, it's an offshoot. It's part of it. And it's just something that was indicative of everything else that has occurred over the past 7 to 8 years. The subprime market and the housing failure that has occurred is an offshoot and a result. So when you talk about the recession, don't look at that and say, well, that's the cause, the housing market failing. No, the housing market failed because we've watched these other two things take place. People out of work cannot pay for their homes. Having interest rates cut so you can pay for tax cuts and for outsourcing and to try to pay for a bogus war cannot put other people back to work and will not make the value of your money hold. When you look at what they are offering, more tax cuts, shooting more money into the economy, trust me, it may sound good, and I won't lie, even I'm looking forward to the possibility of getting a small check. But if it is a loan against next year's tax rebate, you have to ask yourself, is it worth keeping? Is it worth just saving aside, putting aside because you're going to need it for next year? Or do you do what I did in 2001, which is donate the money to charity so I can claim it on my taxes? Don't fall into the lies. Don't believe in what they're telling you as far as this economy. Trust me, we are most likely headed towards a recession. Now, depending on where you live, you already are in one. Depending on where you go, trust me, you are in one. For most Americans who are struggling just to get by, there's no doubts about it. It is a severe time to live in, and we're all just trying to do our best. Okay, and now a word from our sponsor.
Hey, Sally, what you doing?
I'm making a phone call via my AT&T cell phone to my best friend.
Ooh, AT&T? Are you sure you want to do that? I hope it's not a private call.
Of course. Why? What's wrong with that?
Well, Sally, AT&T has allowed the government to eavesdrop on your phone call since before 9/11.
Before 9/11? Well, that does it. I am switching to Verizon.
Ooh, not an option.
Then I'll send her an email.
I hope it's not through Yahoo.
Did Yahoo do the same thing?
Well, Yahoo has sold internet surveillance equipment to China that has wrongfully imprisoned hundreds. But before you switch, companies like Cisco, Microsoft, Google, and Skype have all helped rat out democratic thought. And if you think China's the only customer, do I have a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you?
Oh my God! I can't use my phone, email, and I bet the U.S. Postal Service isn't safe either.
Nope. Not after the president issued his signing statement regarding the Postal Accountability Act of 2006. He can open your mail without a warrant.
But I'm not a terrorist.
Doesn't matter, where the scent may be an issue.
What do? I have to talk to my friends and family.
Well, Sally, for centuries, the trusted carrier pigeon has been the correspondent system of kings and generals to send sensitive information. Just a little note attached to the leg of this little guy, and you are virtually guaranteed privacy from a trained pigeon that will always find its way home. Here, give it a try. Just roll up these handy little scrolls. Well, I almost got it. And then slide it onto the holder on its leg, and presto! There you go!
Hey, that was easy. Wait, did that bird just shit on my hand?
You bet he did! And isn't a little shit on your hands worth the price of freedom and privacy? Yes, for all your communication needs, carrier pigeons are the way to go.
Wait, am I gonna get the bird flu?
This message brought to you by the American Association of Carrier Pigeon Retailers, who remind you, when it has to be private, what's a little bird shit between friends?
Okay, well, it's that time to give out the What a Weenie Award. And as I mentioned before, I wanted to give the What a Weenie Award to Fred Thompson. I also wanted to give it at one point to Bill O'Reilly. And Bill O'Reilly made a statement that just drove me nuts when he mentioned that he couldn't understand where all these homeless vets were coming from. He just didn't buy that John Edwards had something to say, or that there were these massive amounts of homeless veterans sleeping under bridges. It was such a ridiculous statement when he said it that, you know, I almost had to shudder, and I was on the verge of pure anger when I heard it, because it is such a horrific thing to say, because it disqualifies and just pushes aside as if this doesn't exist as a problem. Well, fortunately, other people have already responded to this, and I have a link to one of these videos that have been put together talking to having interviews with homeless vets, and you can go and see that video on the homepage for Indirect Democracy. Scroll to the bottom, you'll see it in the group of three videos. It's the first one. Take a look at it. If it's not there, just go to YouTube, put in O'Reilly and homeless vets, and you'll get a whole bunch of things. But this statement was ridiculous enough. But that was, I think, too obvious for a choice for the What a Weenie Award. So, what could be it? And this is my choice for the What a Weenie Award. Back in September, when the hearings were occurring to bring in a brand new Attorney General. The choice for Attorney General was Michael Mukasey. Now, Mukasey was confirmed, but it went through a very torturous process and a very hard-fought process because, in the end, what it came down to was the issues of eavesdropping, wiretapping, and, most importantly, the discussion about waterboarding. Now, for those of you who don't know what waterboarding essentially is, for lack of a better term, even though they like to say it's simulated drowning, essentially this is nothing more than drowning a person by holding them back and pouring water down their throat to get them to, through interrogation, to talk about whatever crimes procedures they're going to. It is, for lack of a better word, in fact there is no better word for it, it is torture. It's been recognized as torture for hundreds of years going back to the Spanish Inquisition. This has never been a question. But when it came to Michael Mukasey said that he didn't have enough information to show or believe that this could be described as torture. He couldn't make a full statement about it at the time. Now, it's a ridiculous statement for him to make because most of these people that are brought in for the Attorney Generalship, for any type of nomination that they're going to go into when it's a cabinet-level position, are made privy to specific information, can find out information because they are briefed and made aware about procedures through the White House as to certain things. Now, I'm not talking about top secret things, but we are talking about general procedures. And we're also talking about something that could easily be looked up. It's not as though the internet doesn't exist and YouTube doesn't exist, and this guy couldn't have seen the videos of waterboarding that are out there. But he chose to say that he couldn't make a statement as to whether or not waterboarding was torture. Now, when the vote came up to confirm Michael Mukasey, he needed from the Judicial Committee, which is now run by the Democratic Party, he needed support from that party, and he got his support through Charles Schumer, Senator of New York, and Dianne Feinstein, Senator of California. Now, Senator Schumer and Senator Feinstein backed him, and I'm going to quote you some stuff from a CNN story called Bush Attorney General Nominee Gets Key Democratic Support. In his statement, Schumer said that it was an extremely difficult decision. However, when an administration so political, so out of touch with the realities of governing, and so contemptuous of the rule of law is in charge, we are never left with an ideal choice. Judge Mukasey is not my ideal choice. However, Judge Mukasey, whose integrity and independence is respected even by those who oppose him, is far better than anyone could expect this. Now, what he was saying was, and of course what came out and what people believed, was that Mukasey was going to be independent. Here was a statement from Patrick Leahy. I'm eager to restore strong leadership and independence to the Department of Justice. I like Michael Mukasey. I wish I could support his nomination, but I can't. America needs to be certain and confident of the bedrock principle deeply embedded in our laws and values, that no one, even the president, is above the law. However, when Senators Feinstein and Schumer supported him, they supported him with the belief that Michael Mukasey would be independent enough to stand up to the administration and say that if something was torture, and in particular if waterboarding was torture, that he would have the strength enough to stand up to the administration. Well, here's the story that comes from last week, Tuesday, January 29th, from the Associated Press. Mukasey, waterboarding not for me to judge. Attorney General Michael Mukasey said Tuesday he will refuse to publicly say whether the interrogation tactic known as waterboarding is illegal, digging in against critics who want the Bush administration to define it as torture. In a letter to Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Patrick Leahy ahead of a hearing Wednesday, Mukasey said he has finished a review of the Justice Department memos about the CIA's current methods of interrogating terror suspects and finds them to be lawful. He said waterboarding, which simulates drowning, currently is not used by the spy agency. Now, this goes against what the stories have just come out, that there are now three known cases of waterboarding that has come forward. Now, this is a man who says that he won't make a statement about it, who says that it's not being used, but now we have facts to show that not only one is a torture, but that we have been waterboarding people, and there's probably more people that we have that have been waterboarding. If they've admitted to three, there are way more than these three. I don't think that takes a political scientist or a historian or it just takes a blind dog to tell you that that's probably happened. But what has bothered me about this was that once again, members of the Democratic Party, in particular Senators Schumer and Feinstein, have shown the lack of judgment that comes across when it comes to this administration, and that is why they are the winners of this week's What a Weenie Award, because they have fallen into the trap that seems to fall with a lot of the Democratic leadership, that somehow they're going to give this administration the benefit of the doubt that the people that they bring forward are actually going to be filled with sudden miracle of integrity to tell you the truth. Well, the truth is that we already know this administration and we can believe them for who they truly are. And when given the opportunity, they will only do the right thing when they are completely shamed into it. And Michael Mukasey has proved everything that we've already known about this administration. When the time came for him to come forward and say that something was not only illegal, but that we were doing it, he couldn't do it on both aspects. And for that, Senator Schumer and Feinstein should be ashamed. They should be ashamed of what they have done because they have put in another person who is nothing more than a puppet for this administration and whose independence doesn't exist. For that reason alone, because they actually gave this administration the benefit of the doubt and it got slapped around in their face one more time, Senators Charles Schumer and Dianne Feinstein are the winners of this week's What a Weenie Award. Okay, well, that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode of Indirect Democracy, episode number 29. I thank you for listening through, and I want to thank the longtime subscribers who've had the patience enough to be there and wait through these very long hiatuses in doing production for Indirect Democracy. There will be a new episode of Indirect Democracy as time allows. I have a lot of things coming up, a wedding to plan with my fiance. We're very excited. And, of course, a cute little puppy to take care of. I want to thank Dan Quayle for allowing me to use his music, Break Me Into Pieces. Dan Quayle also has a brand new album out. It is entitled Briar Street, The Acoustic Sessions. You can find the link to purchase that album through dancoyle.com/purchasemusic.html. You can go to dancoyle.com. You can also go to his MySpace page at myspace.com/dancoyle. There are links to that site through the homepage for Indirect Democracy. You can find the purchase music just by clicking the album art that's right there, or just go to and click the link to the MySpace page. And I do want to thank him for allowing me to use his music, and I do encourage you to purchase his music. You should support any independent artist out there, and he's a good one to support. Alright, so in conjunction with the release of the new album by Dan Quayle called Briar Street, The Acoustic Sessions, Indirect Democracy is going to have a contest, and what I would like to get from one of you is an email sent to david@indirectdemocracy.com, and there will be two winners for this. Two different categories, so the first one is related to pets. The very first person who will send me a photo of their beloved pets will not only win a copy of Briar Street, The Acoustic Sessions, but I'll also post the photo onto the homepage for Indirect Democracy. Okay, and person number two, because Dan Quayle approached me dealing with political music, and as I said, he does have some good pieces, and I encourage you to listen to them at his MySpace site, which is myspace.com/dancoyle. I will give a copy of his album. If you will write to me and tell me what is your, this to the first person who does this, tell me what is your favorite political song, and the reason why can be very simple. You don't have to go into a big essay. You can just say, I like this song because it rocks like no other song. So that's the contest. Be sure to get in your entries in before the end of March 2008. So if you're listening to this podcast after March 31st, 2008, the contest will be over. Please feel free to send them in to david@indirectdemocracy.com. And, for, of course, be in contact with you to get all the details to send you that album. So that's about it. And, of course, I would like to thank members of the Progressive Podcast Network who have been a great support. And, of course, I would be remiss if I did not thank Matt Bloodwell and the guys at Megaphone for allowing me to use their music, Not Your Enemy, from the album For Crying Out Loud. It is the intro and outro music for Indirect Democracy, and I would like to thank them, as always, for allowing me to use their music. And, as always, it is time to exit the show with their music. But for now, I would like you all to take care of each other. I will be back soon, and bye for now. Sit, Juno, sit. Good dog.